Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Welcome to episode 98 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley. David Cameron Walker's just finished his tea.
I have indeed, yeah. Lovely burrito.
Nice.
I'm now ready to go.
And also here, making his season's debut in the studio, is Adam Williams.
Hello.
Hello.
To be back.
Yeah, first time we've seen you in a while. So, Dave, you don't know this, but just before you arrived here, me and Adam went to O'Neill's around the corner, just had a bit of food and a catch-up. And there I am.
One of the finest establishments for you, indeed.
There I am on my... on my laptop doing the prep for the show, close it to open, to start eating my meal, and then Adam, what happens next?
I went to put some sauce on my meal, and as I went to put the sauce
ketchup
back in the container, I took out my pint of lager at the same time and spilt it over your laptop.
Oh, over no. My laptop.
Over your laptop. A full pint.
Which?
Yes, virtually a full pint.
This MacBook has survived a full pint of Heineken being spilt on it.
There you go.
But there was a good 10 minutes there where Adam was a very worried man. He even paid for my food. That's how worried he was.
I very quickly rushed to not make a scene in the restaurant as two or three other nearby tables turned and realised what I did to race for as much dry tissue as I could. To
if you can't
up.
Hear this right now, it's because this has died on me while I'm editing this show. But okay. If you can hear this, we're all good. Now, before we start, we're going to tell you about a special offer which you need to get involved in right now, because thanks to our friends at Audible, We Are Going Up can now offer you a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook for you to walk away with right now. It's a special offer that is only available if you listen to us and you go to this URL, audible.co.uk/goingup. So basically, go there, fill in all your details, you get a free 1 month trial, and you can choose from any of 60,000 audiobooks to listen to. And they've got some really good stuff on there. We're just having a little listen to Neil Warnock, weren't we? Off
yes.
the air,
yeah.
Doing his
a treat.
Trials and Tribulations of a Football Manager. So that's one of the books you can download for free. You sign up. Also, iPartridge, the brilliant Alan Partridge book, which came out with some Bobby Robson stuff on there. There's Gazza, there's loads of good football stuff. So get on it.
You don't just have to get a football book.
Of course you don't, no.
You know, you can ingratiate yourself in some culture.
Exactly.
just on the website now, you know, the bestsellers in all categories. You've got... Bill Bryson, One Summer in America, 1927, is currently the bestseller. Why not get
Yeah, so
that?
If you've got a lot of travelling to do to work during the week and this only fills about 50 minutes of it, then get an audiobook free.
Andrew
thanks
Marr's
to Audible.
A History of the World.
There you go. audible.co.uk/goingup is where you need to go.
History of the World. I mean, that must be long, doesn't it?
Well, exactly.
A History of the World.
It'll fill a month.
All of the history in the world, as told by Andrew Marr.
So get to that, audible.co.uk/goingup. Right, later in the show, we're going to speak to Mr. Adam Lord, reporter at the Lancashire and Morecambe newspaper, The Visitor, because of that stunning comeback by the Shrimps on Saturday, beating Chesterfield 4-3 after being 3-0 down. Seven league games unbeaten, they're up to sixth. Jim Bentley's side going well, so we'll speak to Adam later. We'll also round up what's been going on this week in the Football League, and we've got my club. But first, we are going to start in the Championship. At the top of the Championship, two more wins since we last did this show last week for Burnley. They are absolutely flying under Sean Dyche, top of the Football League as things stand at the moment. Let's speak to Chris Bowden, who's on the line right now. Chris, the chief football writer at the Burnley Express. We had him on the show around the time Dyche came into the Burnley job just about a year ago. So Chris on the phone right now. Chris, thanks very much for speaking to us. How surprised have you been by this start then? 26 points from 11 games, 8 wins, 2 draws and only the 1 defeat.
Yeah, I think if you ask Burnley fans, I think even they'd say that they're surprised by it. You know, the players to an extent, but I think they'd always believed they were capable of doing well. But yeah, it all sort of stems back to the work they put in pre-season. You can see from the first game in pre-season, even though they lost 1-0 at Morecambe, that sort of style of play had become more defined over the summer. You know, once he got back into the into Gawthorpe in the training ground, and just a real patience to their passing, and in terms of the hard work, the way they sort of closed down, and it's real distinct change in style, and they've taken that on massively from there.
Chris, it seems to me that, you know, when we're sitting here, what, 11 games in, everybody's surprised at the start that Burnley have made, certainly those outside of Burnley anyway. And they weren't one of the teams that were predicted to do well this season. And I think sometimes this perhaps exposes the folly of people who predict things pre-season. Because we don't take into account... Yeah, like us, exactly. We don't always take into account the ability of managers like Sean Dyche and maybe strikers like Danny Ings and Sam Vokes to improve. Just because they had a mediocre season last season, they were in the mid-table, doesn't mean that they can't go and be better this season. It looks like, you know, all areas of the team have stepped up a bit from last season, you know, manager and players.
Yeah, I've spoken about this with my colleagues at work today, and we're just sort of saying that I think we looked at the sort of, you know, the betting at the start of the season. I think Burnley was sort of like priced below that teams like Sheffield Wednesday and Charlton and Bournemouth to go down. And with all due respect to those sides, I backed Burnley to finish above them at the time. Obviously, you know, with the start they've had, even more so. But it is. You know, teams are often more than the sum of their parts. I think, you know, you don't take into account the sort of. You know, the organisation, the balance of sides, the desire of sides, the spirit, the togetherness. You know, what the managers managed to engender. And I think a lot of people thought we were daft when we sort of pointed out that when Charlie Austin was sold right on the eve of the season, that if you actually look back, as strange as it was, even though he scored a handful of goals, that Burnley's form was actually better in the times when he was injured over the past two seasons, you know, incredibly. It was a strange sort of quirk in the starts. You know, Burnley went on a run in January in particular. He was out with a hamstring injury, and with Volks and Ings, sort of, you know, got them to seventh in the table at the time, which was the highest they were all season.
Chris, Ings and Volks obviously grabbing a lot of the headlines at the moment and doing the business up front. What have you made particularly of Danny Ings and the fact that this week he's been called into the under-21 squad for England?
Yeah, absolutely delighted for him, first and foremost, because he's a cracking kid, you know, a real, genuine, nice guy. You know, I'm sure there's a lot around in football, but he is one of the good guys. But I think we've been waiting for a couple of years for him to explode. Eddie Howe played, quite a handsome figure for him, obviously knew him well from Bournemouth, hurt his knee in his second training session, I think it was, and we didn't really see him until the turn of the year. You know, looked sprightly in the reserve games, scored a couple of goals towards the end of that season, and was, you know, Eddie was going to pretty much build the side around him. Last summer, hurt his knee again, you know, the other knee, in the final pre-season game. We didn't see him until sort of October time, after which time Eddie had, of course, gone back to Bournemouth. So, it's been one of those. We've been waiting for him to sort of kick in. He's got added responsibility. His pace, trickery, technique. We knew he had this in him, to be fair, he's probably exceeded expectations so far. He's been an absolutely top draw.
And Chris, do you think Burnley can keep this up?
Well, I've been asked this. You know, I think a lot of people sort of suggesting, you know, particularly people down the road in Blackburn, that, you know, Burnley are going to need a parachute, they're going to fall so hard, that sort of thing. That seems to be seems to hear quite a lot, but you never know. A lot of people expect the sort of the size of squad to catch up with them with injuries and suspensions, that sort of thing. But when Burnley were promoted 5 years ago, they, you know, one of the smallest squads in the Championship again. You know, and people are looking at the way they're working in games. You know, they're running all over teams at the minute. You know, can they sustain that? And you say, well, why not? You know, Graham Alexander was 38 5 years ago and played in 61 games when Burnley were promoted. You know, there's no reason why, you know, with minimal rotation, that they can't maintain it given a fair wind with injuries and what have you. Maybe add a couple of loan signings the next sort of 5-6 weeks or so before the loan window closes, and if they're still up there in January, fingers crossed, you know, the board will find a few quid to invest.
Chris, a lot was made of the eventual departure of Charlie Austin. You know, he was linked with many clubs throughout the summer. He eventually left to QPR. But what of the players that That Sean Dyche actually brought in, because I remember when he was at Watford, he actually had quite a good eye for a bit of a bargain signing. We didn't have a lot of money to spend on players back then when he was in charge, but he used it very wisely. Any money that he did have, he was good in the loan market. So I'm looking at the likes of Tom Heaton, David Jones, Scott Arfield, and you've also got Michael Keightley on loan, who he worked with at Watford. So all those signings, not necessarily headline grabbers, but decent players that can make a contribution.
I think his dealings in the transfer market have been absolutely sensational, to be honest. I mean, he lost Lee Grant to Derby, who was the player of the season. And for my money, I've watched Granty for 3 years. I've watched Tom Eaton for sort of 3 or 4 months. I think Tom Eaton's a better goalkeeper. He's replaced him without spending a penny. He's got a guy whose family are from the area. He's moved in close to the ground. He's sort of enveloped himself within the community and within the club, and an absolutely massive character. As are the other lads he's brought in. They're a bit of a good age, good experience. He's best pals with Dave Jones, who's made a massive difference as well. Dave Jones has essentially replaced Chris McCann, who was one of my favourite Burnley players over the last few years. If anything, as we are now, I think Dave Jones is a markup on Chris. Obviously, Michael Keightley, we're just about seeing the best of him now. He's getting himself match fit. We're not really seeing his effectiveness in terms of creating or scoring goals, but the work rate, the way he's closing down teams from the front. I mean, he was a big hand in the second goal on Saturday, and doing ever so well. But you'd imagine, given Sean a quid, he's shown what he can do with nothing in the transfer market. Who knows what he can do with a few quid.
One of the accusations I've seen sort of knocking around on social media from fans of other clubs is that Burnley haven't played a lot of teams in the top half yet. I think there's only sort of two or three that they've played. Are you confident they can play against the bigger sides and beat them in this division this season?
I've seen this accusation, and I suppose at the time when they have played some of these sides, so they played Bolton, and Bolton are where they are. I don't think Bolton will finish anywhere near where they are. I think they'll be sort of certainly top half, pushing for top 10, maybe playoffs. At the end of the day, you look at Leeds United, who you'd imagine will be there or thereabouts. They've gone to Elland Road, and not comfortable in beating them. I mean, it was 2-1, but certainly deservedly. Reading, another good side who'll be fancying themselves for promotion. They've beaten Reading, and without exaggeration, if Burnley had won 4 or 5 on Saturday, you couldn't have argued with that. They also beat Nottingham Forest. I know they made 11 changes in the Capital One Cup, and I think they've shown they can take anyone on, they can beat anyone. They're going away from home and winning games. They've not lost at home since March, and there's a real togetherness and spirit there. Obviously, it'll be tested if they do come up on a dicky patch or so. But I think they're good value for where they are at the moment.
And in a couple of weeks' time, 26th of October, you welcome QPR to Turf Moor in what will be likely be first v second. So that'll be the real test. And if they if you can beat QPR, then who's to say you can't stay up in the promotion picture all season, really?
And of course, what kind of reception will Charlie Austin get as well?
Oh, Charlie will get a fabulous reception. I think the people sort of understood that. I think there was a disappointment that he didn't go to the Premier League. Obviously, the whole fell through. He failed a medical over a knee problem that Burnley had no problem with, curiously enough. But they passed a medical at QPR, and going to a club who many people expect to be promoted. So. In his favour, but Charlie was hugely popular. A real good kid about the place. Scored a ridiculous amount of goals, and didn't have a bad word to say about the club. I think he even contacted the club the day before the Blackburn derby just to sort of wish the club the best of luck. So he'll get a good reception. But as you say, it's shaping up to be a fabulous game, isn't it? The QPR just aren't conceding goals whatsoever. Burnley are. Scoring goals for fun, not giving much away at the other end either, and Charlie's in a rich vein as well. I think he's got 5-5, so I think it'll be an absolutely fabulous game.
Chris, just finally, a question on Sean Dyche himself. As I mentioned earlier, I'm a Watford fan, so I do have experience of seeing him as a manager, and I certainly mean it as a compliment when I call him an unglamorous centre-half during his career. He was great for us, but I compare him to Gianfranco Zola, who obviously replaced him, and he was somewhat unfortunate to lose his job at Watford at the time, but he's actually doing better now as the season so far than Zola at Watford. And, you know, Zola will always get linked with Premier League jobs when they come up, but Sean Dyche's name never seems to be mentioned. Do you see that perhaps in the future, could Sean Dyche manage in the Premier League, do you think, maybe with Burnley or with another club? And do you think maybe his reputation, you know, compared to someone like August Poyet, who's just about to go in at Sunderland, would his reputation as a player and him being English hold him back maybe?
I think there is that sort of stigma attached to some managers sometimes, but I think you have to just look at the job he's done. I think everyone at the club's been hugely impressed. And it was a tricky time when he came in. Burnley were shipping goals for fun and scoring goals for fun, trying to find a balance. He sort of made them harder to break down, but the goals sort of dried up a little. And sort of over the course of the second half of the season, probably went a bit more direct in games, and it did a lot of misfortune, but it wasn't too pretty to watch at times. I think the sort of acid test was over the summer, given a pre-season together to bring in players he wants and to sort of instill his philosophy in the players, and the proof's in the pudding so far. It's attractive, it's effective, and as you say, he's sort of his work in transfer markets. It's been superb. And he studies the game. He's a real student of the game. Doesn't rely too heavily on shapes and systems, but it obviously puts a certain amount of importance in it. But he's got a Burnley team there who work as hard without the ball as any side I've seen at Burnley. And they've got a certain off-the-cuff sort of style about them as well with the ball. It's going to take a very good side to turn Burnley over at the moment. And if Sean continues to progress, I'm sure it's going to be good for both the club and his own career.
He strikes me as a man that doesn't get two up when they win or two down when they lose as well.
That's precisely the case, yeah. You see him at times last year, he was sort of trying to say, I think they had a run of about four wins in 18 games towards the end of the last season, and just sort of saying there's not an awful lot wrong here at the moment. And few of the fans who were sort of weeping and wailing, and even ourselves in the press, we were struggling to sort of see the positives at some periods. But likewise now, he's just not getting too carried away and just focusing on being competitive. That's his mantra. We make sure we're prepared, make sure we deliver a performance, and if that gets a win, great. If not, we'll deal with that as long as we've given our best, sort of thing.
And Dave, you were mentioning a couple of weeks ago on the show, there's a new comparison being made about Sean Dyche. He's not the ginger Mourinho, is he?
No, Mourinho's the silver Dyche.
Have you heard this, Chris?
We have done, yeah. Sean's, he was sort of, he was hearing it a few times last season, and he's sort of self-deprecating about it. So, I think they were being a bit tongue-in-cheek about it last season, but there's a real sentiment to it this time from the fans. It's quite a nice little compliment he's got there.
Carry on like this and he'll be managing in the same division as Mourinho next season.
Why not? He's galvanised Burnley to a point where it's as good as it's been since Owen Coyle left the club, and they're in the Premier League.
Long may it continue. Chris, thanks very much for speaking to us.
No, pleasure.
That's Chris Bowden, who's the chief football writer at the Burnley Express. In just a minute, we're going to stay in Lancashire because we're off to the Globe Arena. So Morecambe 4, Chesterfield 3 on Saturday, undoubtedly the result of the weekend in the Football League. 3-0 down to the league leaders at the break, and I've no idea what Jim Bentley said at half-time, but it seemed to work. Morecambe came storming back with goals from Kevin Ellison, Mark Hughes, Jack Sampson, and the winner from Padraig Amond to win 4-3. That's 7 league games unbeaten, and the Shrimps are up to 6th in League 2 and into the playoff spots as a result of that win. Adam Lord is a reporter at The Visitor in Morecambe, and we're pleased to say that Adam is on the phone right now. Adam, described this game to us on Saturday then. Sounds like a bit of a thriller.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to describe, which isn't good in my line of work, obviously. I did have a few people come up to me at the final whistle and sort of say, I do not envy you trying to put that into words. The most remarkable thing about it, I think, is that the gulf between the two sides at half-time was so great. Chesterfield playing so well. Morecambe contributed to their own downfall, a couple of injuries there for the goals, but there was such a gulf there. Chesterfield looked so confident, and they were Morecambe were down and out. But as soon as that first goal went in a minute into the second half, it was just the sense around that something was on. And sure enough, I think goal times are sort of on the hour, then 20 minutes from time, and then that's it up, sort of the grandstand finish that we got. It was incredible. But definitely the most remarkable game I've seen live, certainly, definitely reported on.
DC, you were happy with some of the defending in it, though, were you?
Absolutely terrible in the first half. I mean, Chesterfield didn't cover themselves in glory second half, but as you said, Morecambe, those, the first goal that the centre half just tries to kick it and completely misses it, then the second goal was a bit of a better goal from Chesterfield, I suppose, but the third one, just players committing themselves too early, like real basic mistakes that, you know, wouldn't look out of place on a, you know, on a pub football pitch on a Sunday. Really, really poor. But then, as Mark said, just to do what they did in the second half, I guess, you know, the timings of the goal, you know, what were significant. If you are 3-0 down, you have to get one back early doors. Then all of a sudden, it's just the psychological impact of that starts to turn.
Yeah, I mean, speaking to the players and the manager afterwards, certainly, Pori Amund, who got the winner, said to me, you know, straight away, said they went out thinking, A, okay, we've got to try and get ourselves back in the game, but the most important thing we can't do is obviously can't see the fourth. And they openly admitted to me that, you know, if it had been even five minutes, definitely 10 before the first goal went in, it would have been a different story completely, I think. But as I say, there was just the atmosphere that, you know, there was sort of the, oh, here we go, what if, you know, maybe, probably not. But as obviously, as with all games like that, as the goals went in, it just, there really was only one winner.
It's weird because I think that fans of sort of bigger clubs or Premier League clubs can get a little bit sniffy about sort of the Football League when you sort of say, oh, the atmosphere was amazing at a League Two ground. But, you know, it always, in situations like that, when a team are coming back from 3-0 down, it gets to 3-2, 3-all. It doesn't matter if there's 5,000 people or 50,000 people in the ground. The home crowd are going to be having a massive impact on the players.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, there were 2,200 there, which, as you say, would be sniffed at higher up. But when there are grown men in tears around me,
it's only October, Adam.
I don't think it matters what level it's at, but it was incredible. And as I say, the thing for me was the gulf in the first. It wasn't like Chesterfield nicked a couple, you know, and Morecambe. I mean, Morecambe had one excellent chance 3 minutes before the break. Amund had brought a good save out of Tommy Lee 1-on-1. But apart from that, it was one-way traffic, and at one stage it looked like they could have been. If it had been four at half-time, I don't think they would have grumbled, because at one stage it looked like they were going to score every time they went forward.
Well, a lot of people have said that they're the best side in that division, and from what you're saying, it sounds like they were in the first half. Tell us a bit about the start of the season in general then, because Morecambe have had a couple of high-profile games in the Capital One Cup, beating Wolves and then losing to Newcastle. How's it been in the league?
In the league, it's going well. I mean, the one thing they have a habit of doing is coming from behind. Three of the wins on the bounce, they came from behind, and obviously they've done it again on Saturday. It's as admirable as it is in terms of team spirit, which is a massive factor there. It's a small squad. It's a lot younger squad than it was last year due to budget cuts. So the team spirit is a massive factor. They'll know they can't keep coming from behind, as heroic and dramatic and as admirable as it is. But it is about the togetherness there. They do bang on about that, and rightly so, because, as I say, it's a young squad, a manager only in his third season now, so. But they're an excellent unit. How far that will get them, I don't know. Whether they can keep this up with the size of squad they've got. I mean, a couple of league games ago, they had all six outfield subs had come through the club's academy. Two were current youth teamers, two were first-year pros, and two were second-year pros. So it gives you an idea of how stretched they were. And that was with three injuries and a suspension. But no, they're doing great. I mean, they're obviously delighted with the start, and as I say, quite rightly so, especially when considering right before the start of the season, they lost Jack Redshaw to injury. He's back in December last season, top scorer. He's had hip surgery. So there was a worry about where the goals were going to come from, because they were reliant on Redshaw and Kevin Ellison last season. But Jack Sampson, who was released by Bolton, stepped up. Amund's obviously coming from Accrington and chipped him with a couple of goals, and the goals come from midfield as well. So it's an excellent start.
We mentioned the other week in a sort of roundabout kind of way that Jim Bentley is one of the longest serving managers in the Football League now, and you alluded to it there. Do you think that's a factor that's going to work in Morecambe's favour when it comes down to the promotion running potentially this season over some of the other sides in the division that you could argue are probably a little bit more fancied?
I don't know. I mean, I think the stat about Jim is more indicative of where football's at the moment, I think. And this is probably why you brought it up, because say he's a young manager. I mean, you turn around to him and go, I mean, I remember we've done two or three interviews where you go in with them and go, oh, you know that, I think the one a couple of, was it last season at some point, he suddenly became the longest serving manager in Lancashire, was our start up north. But yeah, definitely. I mean, listen, they were back into the hilt. He has had budget cuts, but he's brought in good players. He's brought in the right type of player in terms of either younger lads who've been released from higher up, your Jack Sampsons who want the first team football, need the first team football. People who maybe hasn't worked out elsewhere and they've got a point to prove, likes of Mark Hughes, who came straight in as captain, Marcus Marshall, and he's developing a habit for polishing some diamonds from non-league. Ryan Williams last year came from sort of real in the Welsh Premier League latterly, and Alex Kenyon, who was man of the match probably on Saturday in the middle of the park, was relegated with Stockport County last year. So, yeah, there's confidence in him, definitely, and that the players, every player you speak to who goes there who plays there at the moment certainly says he is a massive factor in what is going on there at the moment.
I mean, what kind of a character is he? I mean, he comes across quite honestly and quite raw, I suppose, in his interviews, but just give us a flavour of what he's like as a manager.
Yeah, he's honest. I think the thing with him, first off, was he was the Wembley winning captain, so he's built into that football club, certainly in modern times. When they got promoted to the conference, he was, say, he lifted the trophy to the Football League from the conference, he lifted the trophy. But certainly, he was a fairly, I mean, you won't mind me saying this, he was a fairly rugged central defender. a big number five, got his head on it, got to tackle him, but very modern coach, puts an arm around his players, you know, and quite a flexible coach and one who certainly is, they're surprising a few people. And he and assistant Ken McKenna, who I should mention as well, are definitely, you know, major factors in that.
You talked a bit about the attendances earlier, and I'm just reading a stat on the BBC Sport website. It's from a few weeks ago, saying that apart from Dagenham and Redbridge, Morecambe have attracted the lowest average home attendance this season in the league, although there was over 5,000 there, wasn't there, for the Newcastle game. Do you think there is the possibility, if they continue to go like this, that the numbers will improve, or is there just not the support there?
Well, so on this topic, I mean, it's a topic in the newspaper, certainly, we regularly touched upon, in terms of the club aren't happy with the figures. They tried various things. Upturns in form don't seem to particularly have a big bearing on them.
More free pies?
Well, yeah. I certainly wouldn't complain. You've got to bear in mind as well, up until 2007, it was a non-league club. I would still maintain, some people will disagree with me, that it's not a football town still. And it will need something extra special, I think, to increase the numbers on a regular basis. I mean, the club are working hard to do everything they can for it. As I said, the Newcastle game gave them a flavour of what could be, shall we say. It was a record for that ground. Obviously, the TV cameras were there as well. It's something everybody involved with the football club wants to improve. Obviously, something the people, the diehard fans, are turning around to friends and going, "Listen, you know." And I mean, the second 45 minutes on Saturday could certainly be used as a marketing DVD, I think.
You've got five games in the next couple of weeks when you factor into the equation the Football League Trophy, the Johnson's Paint Trophy against League One's Carlisle. Is the squad big enough to cope with, you know, with such a high amount of games in a short space of time? Will Bentley be bothered about the Football League Trophy at all, or is it all about the league?
Well, speaking to him, I mean, he will have to switch a couple, I think. I mean, he's named a fairly similar side for the last few weeks, partly down to injury. As I say, they were down to youth team lads on the bench 1 week. But he does. I mean, I asked him on Saturday about the Carlisle game. He turned around straight away and said, "Listen, it's our best shot at Wembley," which tells you something about, despite being sixth in league, what he thinks of sort of any loftier ambitions. They'll have their feet fairly on the ground. I mean, his ambition every year is just to improve, be it points or places every year, which is an achievement with the budget going down and, as I say, the history of the club. So yeah, he'll obviously, I mean, every manager says he wants to win every game, but he'll want to win. He won't want to throw away the game against Carlisle on Tuesday. The squad will be stretched. It already is stretched effectively, with Jack Redshaw out and Chris McCready, a fairly key defender, broke his collarbone a few weeks ago. I remember doing the sort of pre-start of the season interviews and him turning to me and just going, "I need luck with injuries," and it seemingly has already run out. But they're all, as I say, pulling together, team spirit in there to get themselves through it.
And the final question from me is a bit about Kevin Ellison, because to people who don't support Morecambe, he is the one name that will crop up regularly when you just sort of watch the goal roundups or whatever from League Two. Tell us a bit about him, because I'm just looking at his career and he could be described, Adam, as a journeyman.
a, a, journeyman, yes. I've heard it. I've heard him. There aren't many clean words used from opposing fans to describe Kevin Ellis, I think it's fair to be said. I spoke to one sort of fellow journalist who was watching him, just said he described him as a permanently angry man as well. There are pictures every week of him firsting up to goalkeepers or whatever, but it's the way he is, and he is very much a love to have him in your side, hate to play against him. The reality for Jim Bentley is in a younger side, he's an experienced head at 34 still, and he's still sort of rolling back the years in terms of his goal output from sort of what effectively is a left-sided.
He scores some good goals as well, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, yeah. He's got a habit of scoring spectacular goals as well. I mean, if the ball is dipping out of scant out of left foot, you can be sure that he's going to have a go. But he's a vital player in there. Just obviously, as the years go on, it's just a case of making sure they manage him properly and can get him through all 46 games.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for coming on, Adam.
And, no problem.
Best of luck for the rest of the season to all Morecambe fans. That's Adam Lord, who's a reporter at The Visitor in Morecambe. And right now it's time for our weekly fix of My Club, celebrating the various Football League clubs and their fans in 125 seconds to mark the 125th anniversary of the Football League. And this week, it's all about Colchester.
This is We Are Going Up, My Club in 125 seconds.
Hello, my name is Ashley Herbert and my club is Colchester United.
OK, Ashley, can you remember your first ever Colchester game?
Yep, it was in August 95, a Coca-Cola Cup first round, first leg game against Bristol City, which Colchester won 2-1.
Who scored the first ever goal that you saw live for Colchester?
I believe that was Mark Kinsella, who's now our assistant manager. Mm. Like I say, we won 2-1 that night, and I believe it was a 25-yard cracker.
Your best moment as a Colchester fan?
There's a few moments. I think possibly beating Ipswich 1-0 in the Championship. being an Ipswich lad myself, it was quite satisfying the next day at work.
Well, Adam here is an Ipswich fan. What were you going to ask, Adam?
No, I'm not going to ask that question. What is your fondest memory of watching football at Layer Road?
I think the whole Championship season in the first year, obviously, it was four defeats all season. It was just like, you see, every team that we played, we just brushed them aside, and it was a brilliant season to support Colchester.
Can I say, by the way, the question he was going to ask you was, why do you hate Ipswich? Because they don't hate you.
I get it all the time, but I think it's just the years of stick from people living in Ipswich of me supporting Colchester, going through school and getting constant stick. It was quite sweet just to stick one over on them a couple of times in the Championship.
What's your lowest ever point as a Colchester United fan?
I think possibly the following Championship season we lost to Ipswich 3-2. 3-1, and Colchester missed that penalty with 20 minutes to go, and with the score 1-0 to Colchester.
I was at that game, and the now Ipswich goalkeeper Dean Gherkin, I think, was in goal for Colchester, wasn't he?
I believe he was, yes.
Yeah, I remember that game. Yeah.
And finally, Ashley, your favourite ever Colchester manager?
It's got to be Phil Parkinson. What he did with the club, he come in with us at the bottom of what is League One now, Division Two, and he took us to the Championship before leaving for Hull City. But yeah, the job he done for us was absolutely brilliant, and he's doing it again with Bradford City.
It certainly is. Okay, Ashley, your 2 minutes is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
My Club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
Right, OK, it's time to start our roundup of what's gone on in the Football League this week, and we should kick off with our lead story last week. Steve McLaren appointed as Derby manager. Adam, they were playing your team, Ipswich, in midweek. They were 4-1 down at half-time, and they came back to draw 4-4, and then they followed that up with a good win against Leeds on Saturday. Very good start for Steve McLaren.
Indeed, yeah, apparently he worked his magic at the half-time interval of their game against Ipswich last Tuesday. Wasn't actually in charge for that game, of course. He was watching from the stands, but at 4-1 down at half-time, he decided to step into the changing room and have a few words.
I wonder what he said. The first time he's probably met the players, you'd imagine.
Possibly.
Hello, probably.
Hello, do I need my umbrella? But whatever he said, it clearly works, because they turned it around.
That's probably him on the phone now. Go on.
They turned it around fairly dramatically and clawed back a 3-goal deficit and scored the fourth goal, actually, with quite a lot of time left in the game. So by all accounts, they could have even had time to win.
They looked good on Saturday, though, didn't they, DC?
Yeah, absolutely.
Some brilliant goals in there. Fantastic link-up play.
Really, really poor defending as well by Leeds for the first goal in particular. Three men on one. There's two men, it's three on two, and three men went to one of the
I know, I saw
and left the other one for spare. Ridiculous. But yeah, the goals were nice. They're playing some nice football. And I kind of think...
Whose phone is that, by the way? I'm sorry to interrupt.
It might be me, actually. One second.
In your own time.
Yeah. No, it's not actually. So the mystery continues.
I don't know what that noise is. Sorry, carry on.
I was going to say, we remember what Owen was saying last week in the fact that it was disappointing for some people at the club and some of the fans, some of the players, that Nigel Clough was relieved of his duties. But now they've got these two results in a week. You know, they get that draw out of nowhere against Ipswich. They beat Leeds comfortably, and you look at the league table, and it psychologically they must be feeling very positive, I think, about the season ahead now. And you know, if they can keep this little run going, then they could be right up there in the playoff picture. Whereas under Clough, if they'd got this result, you'd probably be thinking in the back of your mind, I wouldn't bet on them next week because they've just won one. They're always going to lose one afterwards. Yeah. You know, so it's a psychological thing. If McLaren, and he is known for that as well, working a lot with sports psychologists and sports scientists and stuff to work on the other aspects of the game as opposed to just the tactics and the training. If he can keep it going, then you know they could potentially be in the playoffs this season. They've got players who are good enough, and they've got an outstanding player in Will Hughes.
Brilliant goal he scored on Saturday. Let's take this opportunity to talk a little bit about Ipswich. 1-0 draw at Sheffield Wednesday at the weekend. What have you made of the start in 11th place after 11 games?
Well, it's fairly not a lot to talk about, really. We've been decent at home. David McGoldrick's bagged a
player of the month, wasn't he?
Yeah,
last month?
No, he was, and deservedly so. He's bagged two or three pretty decent strikes so far this season. In recent weeks, while we've obviously given away some leads away from home, it has been nice to see that we've got goals from other sources other than David McGoldrick, because I was getting a little bit concerned that we might be turning into a little bit of a one-man band. I think McCarthy is reasonably satisfied with how things have gone so far. I think I mentioned at the start of the season that expectations probably aren't that high this year. I think more than anything, fans are a little bit more patient now than they perhaps were two or three seasons ago, and just want to see sort of signs of progress and progression amongst a squad of players. And I think Mick's managed to bring on two or three players this season in the transfer window that I think he has a view that he wants to build something here and move it forward. And I think fans are fairly sort of happy just to see how it goes at this stage, and aren't going to get overly concerned if we go two or three games without a win. But it is disappointing to give away some points away from home, especially against two teams.
I'd have loved to have seen his face after that Derby game midweek. I wonder what he said to the players afterwards.
Well, I understand he was quite calm in his post-match press conference, and he wasn't too visibly angry about it is probably the best description, but I'm sure he would have gone away from that game, him and Terry Connor would have looked at it and then taken a bit of time and then said something in training the next day or the day after that, gone away and thought about it and worked on some things and moved forward. But you know, we just need a little bit of luck. We've played some good games where we've not quite had some fortune, and we've had a little bit of a fortune the other way, but at the moment, you know, not too bad, and I'm not too bothered either way.
Well, top of the championship, sorry, at the moment are QPR, still unbeaten. Took them 66 minutes to break through against Barnsley. That's 8 consecutive clean sheets in a row. 2 more for Charlie Austin. But DC, David Flitcroft must be under a little bit of pressure there. Barnsley haven't won a game, I don't think, yet. Certainly not away from home. And maybe that momentum that they sort of built up towards the end of last season has kind of fallen away already.
Absolutely. But, you know, I suppose the what they've got to do now is hark back to last season and remember the desperate position that they were in when Keith Hill left and his assistant David Flitcroft took the reins, and he, you know, managed to get them playing really well, some really good football, and they put together a great run of results towards the end of the season and, you know, managed to get out of trouble, even though it, you know, was really close on the last few games of the season. But, you know, it's been poor, especially away from home, as you said, but points-wise, it's not like they're getting cut adrift at all. There's been other teams down there who are struggling with them, Bolton, Yeovil, you know, Sheffield Wednesday down there. So I wouldn't, if I was Barnsley, I wouldn't press the panic button and get rid of Flitcroft. I think he did enough last season to suggest that he is the right man for the job, but they do need to certainly pick up some more points away from home.
Patience if you're a Barnsley fan. You did mention Bolton there. They finally got a win at the weekend. And Neil Dan's back on the score sheet. It's been a long time since we've been able to play that. But finally, Dougie Freeman got that one. He said he wasn't getting too worried, but inside he must have been.
Of course you would. I mean, a team he's shown, again, like Barnsley, when he came in last season, Bolton were really struggling, and he managed to get them all the way up to within a whisker of the playoffs. And, you know, there's that phone. Phone's going again.
Where is that phone?
You need to take control of the situation properly and sort it out. But anyway, no, Bolt, I mean, and as we've said, in the weeks past, that he's got a fantastic squad of players there, and it's not really acceptable for him to come out and say, as he did a few months a few weeks into this season even, that some of them aren't good enough, when most of them now are ones that, you know, he's worked with for some time, and some of the ones he's brought in himself. But, you know, they've got the win, so they have to try and move forward from there now. Well, it wasn't a particularly brilliant defending from Birmingham for that first goal.
Birmingham are a weird team, aren't they? They seem to win like 4-0 one week, then lose, then 4-1 the next week, then lose. Can't get any consistency going.
And a couple of people I spoke to who saw them play at Reading the other week and they lost 2-0. A couple of Birmingham fans said that they couldn't even remember a noteworthy moment in that game, that they were that nondescript and completely not at it. The whole game just pretty much passed them by. But going back to Bolton, you know, they got the luck there, didn't they, that you need when you're in that situation.
They probably should have given away a penalty.
Well, yeah, I mean, Lee Clark was absolutely apoplectic about that, wasn't
it? Liam Feeney, wasn't it? Both hands above his head, basically.
But those are the decisions, you know, that when you're in that position and you need a win, if they go your way, you're absolutely delighted.
And Liam Feeney, which will segue nicely into our next point. Liam Feeney, of course, joined Bolton from Millwall, and I believe he's picked up man of the match.
We don't just throw this stuff together.
In the two games that he's played for Bolton. And similarly, James Henry, who's joined Wolves on loan from Millwall, was man of the match at the weekend in their win against Colchester. So Millwall are giving away good players, it seems.
They are, and Millwall 2 defeats this week, and also in that Colchester game, there's a brilliant penalty celebration from Carl Hakimi, which you picked up on right at the end.
Just to put it in context, Wolves 3-0 up away from home, heading for another good clinical performance in that division. Give away a penalty in the 4th minute of stoppage time, I think it was. Hakimi was the man who made the error. Up steps Freddie Sears. Hakimi saves it.
Good save.
Yeah, good save. But the way he celebrates it, it's as if he's saved the winning penalty in the World Cup final. He's absolutely dancing around on his feet.
Do you reckon goalkeepers get like a clean sheet bonus?
Almost certainly. Absolutely.
Well, that's probably why. I think we're 6 or 7 points in to this. We should mention Kasper Schmeichel, who had a bit of a mare on Saturday, didn't he?
Absolutely. Oh, terrible. Basically threw the ball into his own net, and you know that, along with some of the errors we've been talking about already, you know, the likes of the Morecambe players and the Leeds players, it sort of gives me comfort though when I see that, because you know, even professional footballers who are paid very, very handsomely indeed to play week in, week out for their clubs can make horrific errors, you know, that I would do on a Sunday.
Well, by the sounds of what you said just before we started recording the show, you probably played a lot better than them this weekend.
I was very hungover on Sunday and I had a good game, yeah.
What amazed me about that error is that there's nobody really near him, was there? When the corner came over, it was a terrible delivery and he wasn't under pressure at all.
Do you think he was already thinking about where he was going to kick it or where he was going to distribute it?
Yeah, quite possibly. But another thing I picked up in that game while I was watching the highlights was, and this extends from your point that you made last week about stupid things that commentators say. Mm. You know, last week you were talking about if only they could buy a goal.
Yeah.
One that came up in this game was that phrase, and you hear it in cricket as well, when he hits them, they stay hit. What does that mean?
It's a very good point.
That's momentum. You put your foot behind it and the ball moves forward.
Alan Shearer on Match of the Day was all over the you can't buy a goal. It's Papi Sissé. I said it about three times. Right, let's move down into one more thing, sorry, from the Championship. This is beautifully put together this week, isn't it? It's all over the place. Wigan Athletic with their first ever win in Europe, 3-1 against NK Maribor on Thursday night in the Europa League. And it's included a stunning individual goal by Nick Powell, who they've signed on loan from Manchester United.
He's a very good player.
And given the way that Manchester United started the season, quite surprised really that they let him go. And he's looked fantastic since he signed for Wigan. And I should quickly say they went on to beat Blackburn at the weekend, and Wigan Warriors won the Super League. So just a great week, for Wigan.
And they're also the current FA Cup holders as well, of course.
That's true.
Wigan very much the sporting capital of Britain, as we stand.
Absolutely.
You were born in Wigan as well, weren't you?
I was, yeah.
Maybe now is your time to, you know,
to claim it. This is the moment to celebrate it. League One, Adam, goal you wanted to mention from Kyle Reid for Bradford away at Walsall.
Yeah, very good strike. In fact, two very good goals for Bradford, who are on a very good run of
form. Fifth in the league.
James Hansen.
Yeah, James Hansen as well. Very good strike. But Kyle Reid struck a very good...
You know what?
When he hit that, it stayed hit.
It certainly did.
I saw the Bantams banter lads giving a little bit back to some of the Bradford fans after Reid scored. It looks like maybe they've been getting a bit of stick, I think, in previous weeks, but silenced the doubters with that strike.
Top six of League One in there at the moment. In fourth, you've got Bradford. In sixth, you've got Rotherham, two of the promoted sides from League Two.
Yeah, Rotherham have gone a bit under the radar as well, haven't they, really? I mean, they
won at Brentford this weekend.
Snuck into that third place, didn't they, last season? They finished second, didn't they, in the end? That's the thing. They just jumped ahead Port Vale right at the last minute. But again, you know, Steve Evans is doing a really good job. And Steve Evans as well is someone that we're used to hearing a lot of headlines for the wrong reasons about. But actually, since he's gotten back from his big old touchline ban last year, we haven't heard much from him.
Not even seen him.
Maybe he's finally learned his lesson.
Maybe. A couple of final points to make. Notts County with a much needed 4-0 win against Crewe, who are in absolute free fall at the moment. But we should end by talking about a team, speaking about free fall. Yeah, the situation right at the foot of the Football League. We started by talking about Burnley at the top. We'll end by talking about Accrington, not a million miles away from Burnley at the bottom. Played 10 games, 2 points, 2 draws, minus 12 goal difference, 6 points adrift already. In fact, 7 points adrift of safety already. James Beattie has got a hell of a lot of work to do to turn that round.
Indeed, and I mean, he looks the part as a manager in his very smart suits. I saw him the other week when they were at Hartlepool when they did that feature on the Football League show, and he looked very looked the part, but he's obviously got a lot of hard work on his hands there, trying to keep that together.
There can't be many more difficult jobs to get for your first, you know, Football League manager job than Accrington Stanley. Probably, you know, he'd be up there, and there's only maybe one or two other clubs who'd be, you know, as financially challenged as Accrington. You know, you're talking about Morecambe's lack of fan base. Accrington are right down there as well with the likes of Dagenham. So it's, you know, it's hard enough being a manager. When he actually has admitted that he didn't necessarily expect to become a manager at that time, he wasn't necessarily prepared for it. And he's been thrown in right at the deep end. Currently, he is drowning.
Put beautifully. We can't say any more about that. Next week, it's International Week, so there is a couple of games off in League One, but pretty much a full set of fixtures in League Two. So hopefully, we'll have more of a League One, League Two focus on the show next week. Right, finally, before we finish, another quick mention for what we were saying right at the start. Special offer brought to you by our friends at Audible. We Are Going Up can offer you a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook to walk away with right now.
Totally free.
Completely free.
No catches whatsoever.
Audible.co.uk/goingup. You've got 60,000 titles to pick from. We would recommend the Partridge one, obviously, and Neil Warnock. But as Dave said, learn about the history of the world.
Yes.
So go to audible.co.uk/goingup. Important you go to that bit, and that's where you can get the free month trial. audible.co.uk/goingup.
Okay.
There we go. Lovely. The website is weargoingup.co.uk. You can go to iTunes and get us on there. Also on Twitter, it is at Wagyu Podcast if you want to follow us, and you can get us on SoundCloud as well. I think that's all the plugs done for one show. Dave, thanks as ever. Adam, thanks for coming in. My laptop's still working at this moment in time.
I hope so.
If you can hear this, we've got the all clear. We'll speak to you in 7 days' time.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.